In a lot of respects, the more you automate things, for example, automating pricing or automating service, the greater the responsibility to have some oversight within your company to make sure the systems and the data you're using are not inherently biased and are actually creating an amazing, compelling, and fair experience for all of your consumers.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So Brett Greenstein is the SVP and Global Head of AI and Analytics at Cognizant, the multi-billion dollar business consulting and IT giant. And earlier this year, Cognizant joined XPRIZE to launch the Pandemic Response Challenge, which as I looked into it, seemed very interesting and very on topic. It's a competition to create AI systems that can help societies reopen safely in the wake of COVID-19. And it got me thinking about AI's implications across a number of different industries. As always, we'd like to go to the source and speak to people who are, you know, creating the future, or at the very least have a really great understanding of where things are going. Brett, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about a topic that I truly love.
Yeah, I think that obviously you're very close to it, which is something that is very interesting to us. First off, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis in addition to reading your title? But what are the kind of ins and outs of your role and your, you know, daily professional life?
I'm fortunate to get to lead a business that drives the transformation of companies using AI and data. So every day we're helping companies to embrace new data technologies, make data accessible, bring in external data, make sense of it, and apply AI to drive new business outcomes. And in my role, I get to work with clients, get to work with thought leaders across the market, as well as getting to work with delivery teams and experts within Cognizant who are helping to solve client problems using data and AI, mostly on the cloud. I also get to work with industry partners, great ecosystem players, technology players, cloud players. We're all bringing the latest technology to bear. So it's the world's greatest playground, customers with great needs, people who love doing the work, and partners who are building amazing technology.
Yeah, and I know I mentioned this at the top, but I wanted to talk to you because I know Cognizant joined XPRIZE to launch the Pandemic Response Challenge. First off, how did that start? How did that conversation begin? And then what were the net outcomes? Because I know that I read up on it, but it's always interesting hearing it from the source.
I mentioned that we have amazing people who love to work in AI and data. And when you bring data scientists together, they inevitably see meaning in data that everyone else misses. So they were sitting around thinking about the pandemic, as we all were, while Oxford was beginning to coalesce and curate really important data about the spread of the disease, as well as policies that are being put in place in different countries and different states around the world. And that data set was incredibly rich and valuable, and it wasn't being fully exploited yet and leveraged for new insights. And so these data science teams within our company, just on their own, began to see what they could model. Could they predict likely cases in various locations based on different policies in place? Could they evolve that model to make it even better over time, even prescriptive to recommend policies? And what they found was the Oxford data was amazing. It was curated. It included things no one else was collecting. For example, policies around travel and distancing and schools and work closings and masks. When you put all that together with the actual data coming in around new cases, you could create a model that gets updated every single day with a new forward-looking view of what could happen and then recommendations on what to do about it. And our data scientists built it. They didn't know what to do with it. They had this amazing insight. We all stared at it, looking at these powerful predictive models, and we decided the best thing to do was to first publish them. So we published them in tech journals. We published it online. Anyone could have used our model online on the web just to try it and see what's going on. And it created a set of insights we hadn't seen before from anywhere else. What is going to happen in a given state or location? What is the confidence levels of that happening? What happens if mask compliance is introduced or schools are closed? What effect would it have? And these were amazing insights. So we published it and it got a reaction. First, it was companies interested in how it might change the way they think. Then it was other teams around the world. Then the XPRIZE team noticed it and realized, what if we could get data scientists from around the world together to use this data set, to extend it, to create new models? What could we do as a society that a team of great people in Cognizant is one team? What if many teams did this from all over the world? And so we got together with XPRIZE. We decided to pull it together with a few partners and create an environment, a set of standards, a set of tools, and allow data scientists to do what they do, find meaning in data, create better models. And hundreds of teams from around the world registered, about 100 really intensely competed, ultimately getting down to two winning teams who produced the best prescriptive models among all the others.
Yeah, and I liked, as I was reading up on it, I liked that these contestants were evaluated on a number of different elements simultaneously, right? Including inclusivity and fairness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ultimately it's a quantified metric and outcome. And those other metrics are really help provide resilience in the solution. Most people know you can create a perfect model if you exclude all the variables and just focus on one outcome, and it only works in that case. But by having a diverse set of data and inputs, you get a much more resilient model. So these teams were basically tested with real-world data, as diverse as it could be, in order to really find if these models were effective and powerful and accurate. And the teams that won, it was a quantified third-party review of the results to measure the ability of their models to predict, and then the quality of the prescriptive guidance that they gave.
It seems to me, and this is an interesting thing here, is that a lot of people I've spoken to over the last year have pointed out the silver linings of something where we wouldn't have wished COVID on society at large, of course, but there have been some potential upsides. And I think one of those areas seems like it's probably AI research. How has the pandemic shaped the direction of AI research in general?
I think what it's done is really focus companies on the fact that up until the pandemic, the world was reasonably predictable. And what occurred during the pandemic, besides all of the terrible things we went through, was a degree of chaos and uncertainty and change that was so rapid that most businesses were not set up to handle it. I think back to some of the product shortages we saw across the world, that products that spiked and demand grew and shelves were empty for key products, whether it was paper products, later flour and yeast. These are inevitable results of human behavior changing rapidly. And most models and most businesses operate on, they look historically. How has this quarter been the last 3 years? We'll plan for about the same amount this year. When in reality, things changed every week. And it forced companies to think about their data, whether they had the right data, and what predictive models they were using to better understand what's going on in their markets with their customers. And it drove a huge amount of investment in cloud and data and AI, all just to get a handle on changing world.
So what's interesting to me about that, and just to almost be devil's advocate here, can AI predict the unpredictable? Could you theoretically predict a black swan event like COVID in general if the humans who are essentially training the AI don't even know to look for the next COVID? Like now, clearly, this is on our list of potential eventualities, right? So because of that, now we have COVID or another pandemic as something that we can watch for. But can AI be smart enough to catch things that the humans aren't necessarily training it to look for?
The simple answer is no. But the more nuanced answer is that the signals are all around us, the signals of things coming. And AI can be used to find those signals and identify patterns and raise red flags significantly earlier than has been done up till now. So when you look at the pandemic, there was likely, I can't prove this, but there were likely spikes in the adoption of fever suppressant and cough suppressant in locations before people were tested for actually having COVID. There were early indicators of problems everywhere. There's problems detected in wastewater in various cities where they can look at the spread of the disease. There was buzz in social media and other places about people talking about unexplained sicknesses. A lot of this data, these are signals that if ignored, obviously everyone misses. But if you look for them, you can find tremendous meaning. So I think the identifying a black swan event literally would be seeing something you can't see until it's too late. More likely, it's seeing something further ahead than people will notice because of all the many signals that are all around us. And what we all need to do is really have warning systems, whether we're running a business and we just need to see early warning signs of demand spikes or shortages or other issues to countries and policymakers having early warning of possible events and knowing how to jump on it early before it's too big.
That to me is also, I think, one thing that's very interesting about the power of AI. It's not a marketing lever. It's not a thing that, it's not this disparate thing. It's something that is embedded across a number of different industries and a number of different facets of those industries. And I was thinking maybe we could go through a number of different industries and just kind of think about the power of AI to transform our society. Maybe we can start with banking, because I know that there's a lot of opportunity in that area. What promise does AI hold for banking in general?
So AI is already being used heavily for detection of fraud and risk in banking because it's really good at looking through those patterns of data faster than people could, identifying, you know, high-risk transactions and things like that. That's already being used. It's being extended further, though, in retail banking, for example, to create better user experiences that are more personalized by understanding user behaviors and patterns, identifying segments, buying behaviors, and then recommending offers and suggestions to things to people that would be create a compelling experience. There's also been a huge growth in the use of AI for customer service. So in being able to handle spikes in volume for customer service and issues when they do come up, moving tasks from talking to people to talking to systems that can answer without delay, without waiting on hold, without having to press one to speak to billing, press two. That is archaic in a world where AI is able to interpret what people's needs are and either answer the question directly or get it to the right person quickly. And one thing that we're all using and don't even think about it is that AI is being used in a form with image analytics to understand the checks that are being processed all around the world. When you submit a check on your mobile app, some image analytics is looking to do character recognition, identify what's on the check, make sure it's valid, process it without any people having to be involved in the process at all. And we take it for granted that it's there and that it works. It's actually quite effective, scaled, inexpensive, and it allows all of us to have access to banking without having to go to our bank to do things.
Yeah, and that's, I know we'll bounce around between industries for a bit, but I think one thing that I don't know if anybody has a perfect answer on this, and maybe you have an opinion, but I'm just wondering where this is all going in terms of human beings getting more comfortable dealing with AI. And I think a perfect example is chatbots. There are, you know, chatbots where there's really no AI and it's very basic, almost like a decision tree where you're setting something up, and then there's adaptive true AI in a chatbot. And will people be okay with that if they're getting a better experience? I would say over the long haul, yes, they just need to get used to that type of experience. But ultimately, if they can get an answer faster, people don't necessarily care. And then there are more nuanced situations where you might very well need to speak to a human. But what's your perspective on that?
So the growth of self-service through AI has been, it's been growing rapidly over the last several years. In China, only a few years ago, on 11/11, which is their largest shopping day of the year, Taobao, the biggest shop retailer, just began using chatbots regularly to handle all the customer spikes in demand, answering all the common questions that people have. And it became faster and better than waiting for people. So there was no wait. I think you said it really well. Once the experience is better, people will ignore whether it was a person or a bot that answered. I was recently doing a return on a retailer, and I thought I was going to have to call. Then I saw, just say what you want. And I just said I wanted to return this item. It asked me two or three qualifying questions, gave me everything I needed, just sent it right to me. It took me seconds to do. It was faster than calling, less annoying than calling. And I didn't feel the stress of having to explain and justify my return to a person hoping they will like me and give me a free shipping. It made all of that go away. So when the experience is done right, it's lower stress because you're really not dealing with a person, but you're getting exactly what you want in the way you want in the fewest possible steps. And we were using people to respond to questions on our own help desk internally for a long time. And then we started to create natural language bots that could answer questions. And pretty soon, the bulk of our customer service internal is now handled with AI because it just works better. I can type almost anything into the request, and it'll either give me the answer or direct me to the link that has the answer or to a person if it's a really complex question. And I don't have to wait.
I would say that just from a prescriptive standpoint, I think that's pretty good advice for most organizations, is if you're not sure if something is going to take then workshop it internally and see how your own people react to it. I think that's really good advice. I know another industry that's being transformed by AI and that I think you've done some work in is insurance. How is the insurance world going to be transformed through AI now and over the next few years?
There's a lot of exciting things going on in insurance. One of them is obviously the direct consumer interface. So all the customer service things that we talk about in banking or retail apply in insurance as well. Simply making a compelling experience, having the right offer presented to you, having customer self-service type use cases. But in addition, there's the risk and fraud applications that are back office. And then we did a really exciting piece of work in underwriting, where the idea was that every agent you speak to should be the smartest possible agent for your company. So everyone who calls to get an insurance quote should get the very best recommendation as if they're speaking to every agent's a genius. And you do that by providing information to the agents to make the best possible decision. In our case, we were able to, when someone calls and identifies a few characteristics, rather than having them go off and research you or look up on tables or other systems what to give you for advice, this system would recommend the best insurance policy to offer at a rate that would have a high likelihood of you accepting, that also balances risk, revenue, and margin for the company. So on a given day, maybe we're trying to sell a little bit more and willing to take more risk, in which case you can tune the algorithm and then the agents will all get the same advice to give that best advice. Other times, perhaps customer sat and retention is more critical. Maybe you have to be more generous in your offers. You can tune the answer and then the agents all get the same advice that day. So it gives you really a real-time ability to set policy inside the company, to shift your priorities, and then to provide really strong prescriptive guidance to the agent. So they're informed when you call and they know the best likely answer to give you. They can still make up their own answer. It doesn't do it for them, but it augments them. It gives them guidance on how to give a great answer to your client.
Which I think is obviously something I know we'll talk about in a little bit, is balancing technology with the value that humans provide, if any. So I think that's a really good point. It also strikes me that there's a different level of receptiveness to some of these things in one industry to another. A perfect example is insurance or even B2B sales. You're selling somebody something where there's imperfect information. So you can really optimize for the company in terms of what's the thing that the client is going to receive. I can imagine a perfect example would be a major online retailer, and you optimize and the AI model gives people in certain zip codes higher prices than others. And I can obviously, from a PR standpoint, just imagine how something like that would go haywire pretty quickly.
So the reality is that's not an AI issue. That's a policy issue that could be happening now on the web, even with people doing it. So it's not really AI that does that. I think when AI is being used to tailor pricing or doing things, you also have an additional responsibility as a company to look at what we call responsible AI, to look at how the AI is being done so it is not creating a bias towards certain populations or segments or buyers in a way that would be damaging to your brand or damaging to society or create risk or liability. So in a lot of respects, the more you automate things, for example, automating pricing or automating service, the greater the responsibility to have some oversight within your company to make sure the systems and the data you're using are not inherently biased and are actually creating an amazing, compelling, and fair experience for all of your consumers. And it's harder to do, but this, you could say the same is true for human agents that are also inherently biased. It's just that when you automate things, you scale them and the responsibility is greater. And so there's a lot of good ways for people to really understand bias, to look for the outcomes, and make sure they're delivering a great brand experience.
Yeah, I think that is, in some ways, one thing that I would say is probably positive about the world that we're in right now is if you're not worried about inclusivity and fairness and making sure that you're not hurting vulnerable groups, your brand will probably get dinged by the marketplace. So incentives are aligned now, it sounds like, for brands and organizations to do the right things because it's aligned with their pocketbooks.
Yes, but there is now also greater risk because increased automation without the proper oversight can cause bad things to happen. There was a Twitter feed I saw yesterday. There, something horrible was posted on someone's Twitter feed. Was it automatic? Was it a feed? Was it a content management issue? Was it just an intern? Who knows who did it? But the point is, someone has to watch these things and take accountability you can't blame automation for bad things that happen to your brand or to your consumers or to your employees. And so business leaders increasingly need to become what I call AI aware, data sensitive. They just need to recognize that the use of data has a responsibility for fairness and equity and privacy and all that stuff, and that systems cannot be delegated just to technologists. Business leaders now need to understand how AI works, the risks that it may have, and then manage those teams to great outcomes, the same way you manage people to a great outcome.
Yeah. And I want to jump back into one other industry, which I know you have some ideas on, which is healthcare. It seems to me that there are a lot of potential applications where AI can add some value or transform healthcare over the next few years, correct?
It's almost endless. There's the obvious cases that around, again, the consumer-facing parts of the business, risk and fraud, like the insurance cases. But in addition, we did a really amazing piece of work with Mount Sinai Hospital using natural language processing to better understand the risks to patients just from their own living situation. When people talk to doctors and nurses, they tend to say an enormous amount. And it gets written sometimes in a notebook or on an iPad and might get used or referenced by a doctor in the future. But we found that if we digitize that information, we could look for things that might determine somebody lives in a five-story walk-up or doesn't have access to a car or can't afford medication or might live in a dangerous situation. Any of those could likely lead to poor follow-up care and readmittance to the hospital. So by identifying those high-risk situations, hospitals were able to identify mitigation things they could do. Could they offer, for example, subscription service to the medicine or lift gift passes so that people could get to follow-up care? Little things you can do can make an enormous difference in people getting those first few weeks of follow-up care that can prevent months or significantly longer downstream health problems. I also noticed during the pandemic, and I talked to many healthcare companies about this, there was an enormous amount of deferred care. There's significantly more analytical techniques and AI-based methods to look for potential high-risk situations where we can encourage people to come in for care and checks so that they can prevent much worse problems down the road. And I think this is going to be a data-driven approach towards healthcare in a time now where people didn't come every year for the same checkup or every 5 years, but we all basically missed a year and a half. And we don't know what the long-term effects are of that, and that'll have to be studied with data, and then hopefully recommend people come in for their checks and their care to prevent the unknown.
I think another area that people missed the time is education. And it's interesting to me, I think that there are a lot of people who are very interested in the area that you're in, and it's going to be more important 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and it's probably a good place from a career perspective, especially people who are interested in studying large swaths of data and figuring out where things are going in general. What's the best way for somebody who's listening to this who is just saying, this is an area that I want to be in, I want to get a little bit closer to, what would you recommend that they do?
So I hear this a lot, and people often think, if I didn't spend the last 20 years learning machine learning and data science and data engineering, it's too late. It's not. Fortunately, the technologies have advanced so much that anyone who learned a lot of the techniques from 20 years ago, they had to learn the new technologies also. And more I see people going online and learning, just beginning classes, starting out. This is enormous free education available from companies like Google, from universities doing online classes, to private education groups like Coursera and others. So there's a lot of opportunities to learn. And I have a friend who's my age, and his wife recently got a certificate in data science and now just started basically a second career working in data science. It is literally never too late. And I think given how new the technologies are and the techniques, you're really building on the backs of decades of other people's work. And now you can add to it. Bring your own perspective, your own industry knowledge. Because the cool part about AI is not just building AI generically. It's not the research. It's the application of it to different business domains. So if you happen to be an expert in retail or supply chain or HR or customer service, whatever you do, that domain knowledge combined with data and AI could be the next killer app. So I think you should think about how you add data science, data engineering, AI skills to whatever knowledge you have and then see what's possible.
Of course, there's a lot of people who they have fully bought into the idea that AI is transformative. And I think they think that there's more good than bad. But obviously, that, like you said, there's higher risk. Things can go in the wrong direction if they're not watchdogged and if they're not properly audited. How important is it to have AI practitioners collaborate and peer one another's work and watchdog one another just to make sure that we don't release things out into the wild that could essentially be two steps back, one step forward, as opposed to the other way around?
I think there's two dimensions to that. One is peer work and peer review is really helpful, especially because there's a lot of new techniques and new approaches. And data science is an art and a science. And there's a lot of different approaches to solving problems, different models, different things to consider. So peers help you elevate that. And one of the things data scientists love to do is to beat the state of the art in whatever model they're creating. So it's a highly competitive environment. I have a model, I can make a better one. And actually, XPRIZE was a great example of teams of data scientists coming together, competing with each other to raise the state of the art on prediction and prescription. So that part is great. But I think the more important part is this business responsibility. I think there's too many businesses where they hire data scientists, throw them off in a room, send some data their way and say, go solve a problem or go find an answer. And that ignores the responsibility of a business leader on what good looks like. An answer might be great. We might be able to tell why revenues have gone down, but the conclusion might be one which leads towards bias or bad behavior. It's just not considering all the factors that a business leader needs to consider. So I really think the best businesses out there right now have business leaders who would understand AI enough and data enough to ask the hard questions. Are the data sets historically relevant? Are they overly biased because they rely on old sources? Do they represent our past or our future? Have you corrected for lack of diversity in the data sets? Is the algorithm producing something fair and equitable for customers or employees or whoever the audience is? And is it ultimately enhancing the brand and the experience or creating something negative and dangerous? It's not that AI is bad. It's that it simply needs to be managed by people who understand how to use it and to make sure that it's doing something good for your stakeholders, whoever they are.
I think that's well said. Brett, thank you so much for making the time. This was a really fantastic conversation for something that's impenetrable to a lot of people.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy. I really enjoyed it. It's something we could talk about endlessly because there are so many use cases and so many challenges ahead. And it's very early days still. The best is still way ahead of us.
Thanks again to Brett for making the time. I thought it was a really interesting topic. And he said you really go on and on in this area and really not cover nearly half of it. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher. The choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and B. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.